Matt Bobala with you here, 720 WGN, 412 in the morning, everybody. Thank you so much for staying up even later with us, or maybe getting up nice and early and turning us on right away. We're in the historic Tribune Tower building in our Allstate Showcase studio for a few more weeks before we move south of the river. I'm Matt Bobala with you here until 5 in the morning. Orion Samuelson will be along with the morning show then. So if you've been listening to the show over the years I've been here, you know that I am fascinated by D.B. Cooper, the mysterious hijacker who, in 1971, hijacked a Northwest Airlines plane. It's a Boeing 727. That's the type that used to have the backdoor exit, the little staircase folded down, and you could walk out the back, as I did on my honeymoon in Jamaica. But D.B. Cooper had a ransom note, gave it to a flight attendant who thought it was just a dude hitting on her, so she put it away, and he's like, hey, you better read that. Said, I have a bomb. He had wires in a bag, looked like a bomb. They get money, they land, they get money, they let everybody else off the plane except for the crew, they take back off, tells the crew to all get in the cockpit, the back door opens, suddenly D.B. Cooper is gone, and we have never found him. Found some of the money years later, like on a beach in a riverbed, but that's it. We've spoken with Thomas Colbert, who's written a book that says that a man named Robert Rackstraw, who lives in San Diego, is D.B. Cooper, and they are convinced that that is D.B. Cooper. Now, another theory has come out. Michigan publisher Principa Media is coming out with a book that says that the hijacker was a former military paratrooper and intelligence operative, Walter R. Recca. The CEO of Principa Media, Vern Jones, joins us on the phone right now. Good morning, Vern. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. So this is literally completely brand new information. This isn't a guy, I believe, that was, you know, the other guy, Rackstraw, that the person we've interviewed says is the guy. He's been interviewed by the FBI. The FBI had said, no, that wasn't him years ago. This gentleman, who we're now saying in the new book, D.B. Cooper and Me, A Criminal, A Spy, My Best Friend, written by the gentleman's name is Carl Loren, who is Walter Recca's friend, says that he was D.B. Cooper. Is this somebody that the FBI has ever even looked into?
No. Well, that's amazing, too, because the FBI, their first suspects were often parachutists, skydivers. And Walter probably had more skydives than anybody in the Northwest at that time. He had literally hundreds of jumps, and many of them in the military, a lot of them recreational in Michigan. But he was one of the people that, for whatever reason, they didn't interview him. The guy that came to pick him up after the jump, he called his friend, he was interviewed. He was also a fire jumper. But for whatever reason, Walter was never on the radar.
So what is the motivation? Why Walter Recca? Let me ask you. So he lived in the Pacific Northwest at the time?
Yes, he did. He lived in Heartland, Washington.
Okay. And what was the motivation for the hijacking at the time? Was he in financial distress? Why did he do it?
Yes, he was tired of being poor, was what what he told his niece. He said, I'd rather be dead than poor. And it was purely money.
Okay. He escapes the plane. Did he keep all the money? Because some of the money was later found, years later. Did he make off with most of the money?
Well, he landed with all the money. When he made his way to a small cafe, when he was the last few hundred feet of his jump, he saw a light, and he kind of walked towards where that light was. It actually was a cafe that was open until midnight. And so he walked to that place. He called his friend. He asked for directions from the only other customer in the cafe at that time, a guy he called the cowboy because he wore cowboy attire and he had a guitar next to him. So he asked Cowboy to tell his friend Don where he was, and then to come and get him. And when Don did stop, he was driving him back to Heartland. He gave, Walter's words, a few bundles of the money and gave them to him and said, now you're wearing this together. But the rest of the money, he went into Canada and put it in a safe deposit box, but he spent a fair amount. He bought a house, he bought a car, and he bought some furniture.
Wasn't the money marked? Wouldn't they have known if that money was being passed around?
Well, it's that was a good question. We checked it out with bankers in the 70s, and of course, there were no computers whatsoever. There was merely a list of all the serial numbers on pages, all these pages just, and they weren't even in chronological order. So the idea that that banks would automatically check every $20 bill coming in was ridiculous.
Sure, but wouldn't the government know? Doesn't the government know if that money has been circulated? Couldn't they check and find out if that money was passed around for years?
Well, they don't. You know, when they again, I'm going back to the bankers, and we talked to them how they get rid of money. All the bills were actually in 2 to 3 years old already that he got them. And it's pretty common for $20 bills to last anywhere from 4 to 5 years in circulation. Mm-hmm. When they take them out of circulation, that goes back to the Federal Reserve. They don't check serial numbers. All they look for is counterfeit, and then they destroy them. And they don't record the serial numbers when they do it.
Hmm. Interesting. So... how did he know that he could pull it off, I guess? And how much detail were they able to get? Because Walter Recca has passed away, right? How many years ago did he die?
He died in 2014.
He died so almost 4 years ago. And
right.
his friend who wrote the book for you guys, he knew that he was D.B. Cooper. How did he figure this out? And was Recca making a deathbed confession? How did this happen?
Yeah. It wasn't really a deathbed confession. That was kind of what some reporters are saying, but it really wasn't. I mean, he had conversations. Carl lived in Florida, and Walter at that time in his life lived in northeastern Michigan. And they would call. They were friends. They started one of the very first skydiving clubs in the country in the 50s. And so it ended up to be 9 of them, but it started out with just 4 of them, and Walt was one of them, as was Carl. So they started skydiving well back every weekend in Michigan, even in the winters. And so they would put on air shows. People would come to the small airport, and they'd pass a hat back in the 50s. Finally, in the 60s, it all kind of broke up, and then Walt went out to Washington State. And that was where he lived. But as soon as the jump hit, Carl turned to his wife, Loretta, and said, can you believe what Walter just did? And one of their other friends called Carl and said the same thing. So they kind of suspect him because it was something that Walter had talked about when they were sitting around drinking after they would jump. And he kept saying, I think the best crime would be one where you just rob an airplane, is the way he said it. So it was something he had talked about way back then. But this group of parachuters, they finally started getting back together in 1998, again in northern Michigan. And they would spend weekends together and just talk about their stories. And Carl was the one who would always record the stories. He started writing them down. And then the next year, they called it a billabog. The next year he'd come back and Carl would pass out the stories. Well, Carl suspected that it was Walt because Walt had disappeared for quite some time. Carl calls this his dark years because he didn't contact his family and he was traveling overseas a lot. And, so he started saying, Walt, you were Cooper, right? And Walt just wouldn't acknowledge him at all. And then finally, in 2008, was when Walt finally said to Carl, yes, I am Cooper. It was strange. They would have these conversations for years, and they would, starting in 2000, Walt would just start telling him about his overseas adventures and some of the things that he did over there. But then he would talk a little bit about the Cooper thing without actually saying it. But finally, in 2008, he admitted to Carl, and from that time on, they were talking a lot. Carl recorded 3.5 hours of the conversations, talking about the jump and leading up to the jump and how he, all the details of how he got to Portland and everything. So that's 3.5 hours of recorded conversation much of them are described in the book.
I haven't been able to read the book yet, but I have just the press releases about it and stuff. And it mentions that maybe one of the reasons this crime was never solved was because the FBI didn't want to solve it, that this man maybe became an FBI operative or an agent or something after the hijacking.
Yeah, it was, he talked with, again, that's on the recordings too. He and Carl spoke of what he did. In 1962, Walter went out to California to Elsinore, to their drop zone out there, and because he had heard that if you start skydiving out there, the CIA often recruits people from there. So he went out there and he met this guy. We have his name, but we don't know if he's still alive or not. So we just call him Philip Q. And Philip kind of ushered him through this whole process so that he could apply to the CIA. Walter was raised in a family that spoke Russian and Polish. And as a matter of fact, he spoke those two languages before he even spoke English. And so he thought with that backdrop or the background, he was a paratrooper in the military. He was fighting quite a bit. He thought he'd get in with the CIA, but in 63, we have the rejection letter by the CIA. He said, we aren't going to be able to utilize your skills at this time. But he kept in contact with this Phil Q. And in 1971, in January, Phil got him a job at a company called Vanel Corporation in Seattle. Vanel has close ties to the intelligence community. It's pretty well known. It's very well documented. Even with interviews with their officials, they admit to being in that business. So he started working there in January of 71. And then, of course, it was November of 71 that they did the hijacking. And then from that point on, two months after the hijacking, he was working at the, he was doing iron work at the Grand Coulee Dam. And about 2 months after the hijacking, two guys came up to him at work and said, you know, hey, well, let's go have a drink after work. So they went to a place called the Brown Derby in Spokane. And as Walt described it, he said that the two guys came in and they sat down and they ordered a beer, and the waitress brought the beer to them and sat in front of them. He said, after the waitress left, the one guy looked at him and said, Walter, I said, Walter Pica, which is bizarre because he was going under the name Recca at the time. He was born Walter Pica, but he was going under an assumed name, which he used for the rest of his life as Walter Recca. And he finally had it changed about 6 years after that. But they said, Walter Pica, do you want to go to prison? And Walter said, no. And then the other gentleman said, then you work for us. And they stood up and left the bar. And he never saw him again. But from that point on, he went through a training. Someone called and gave him, said, there's an airline ticket for you to get on it. And so he started traveling around the country doing these training near college towns, you know, said, primarily in Boise. And so 1974, he got his very first passport under the name Walter Recca, and again, that assumed name. And so he had an eighth grade education. He was a mediocre welder at best. But from that point on, he traveled all over the world, Indonesia, into the behind the Iron Curtain, into Poland. We have his passports. We had diaries. So that part of his life is very well documented.
Well, what does the FBI say about all of this? I'm sorry, I'm running out of time, so I want to get to some meat here. But have you taken this to the FBI? Is the FBI not going to say anything because it's a cover-up on their part and they don't want the true nature or true identity of D.B. Cooper revealed?
Yeah, well, the answer to the question is no, we did not go to the FBI. Walter's niece, actually, Walter wrote a confession, and he also confessed to his niece. And his niece lives in Vegas, and so she had a friend who was a FBI, retired FBI. And so she gave that confession to them. And according to his niece, the FBI agent came back and said, they're not even they won't even take it. I can't believe that they won't even look into it. But the FBI has been very clear. They said that the only thing that they would accept as evidence is one of the $20 bills or the parachute. Obviously, that's really limiting your scope of your investigation. Yeah. But, yeah, they're aware of this, but we haven't had any response from them directly at all. But they've closed the case, as you know.
Sure, but they did say, you know, with new evidence, we would look back into it. Did he still have any of the money at all?
No, he didn't. He didn't. He ended up transferring the money once he started traveling and working with the he said it wasn't when Carl would say, did you work for the CIA? He would immediately say no. He called Carl Charlie. He said, no, Charlie, it's not the CIA. It's not just one of them. I work for all of them. And he just kept repeating that phrase. And we're thinking that it also meant, I know that he talked about working for the Israelis at one point. He had a KGB passport, as a matter of fact. I'm sorry, not a passport. It was an identification. So he had passports from England and the United States. But so it's, I don't think I'm not sure it was the FBI. I don't know who interfered with the investigation, but we don't have any direct evidence of that. But Walt was very careful to say, it's not just one of them. I work for all.
Well, Vern, we only have a moment left, but what's your level of belief in this? Because it sounds like this man confessed and said he did all these things, but we don't have that one piece of evidence that says, look, this really was him, do we?
No, we don't. The only evidence we have are the long underwear that he wore, and he gave those to Carl. But what we do have, obviously, are the conversations, 3.5 hours of conversations with Kate. We have a witness that saw him after the jump, that met him, the cowboy that he met in the bar. We found him, and he literally recalls the encounter. He was former police officer. And then we have his confession to his niece and his sister.
What about the friend who picked him up, who he gave supposedly a bundle of money to?
Yes, he passed away. I think he passed, I could look at it, but I think it was well before Walter passed away, Don died.
The book is out now, right? It's available now?
It is.
D.B. Yes. Cooper and Me, A Criminal, A Spy, My Best Friend by Walter Recca's friend Carl Lauren, available from Principal Media now. Vern Jones is the CEO of Principal Media. We appreciate you jumping on the phone and curious to see where this heads, and we'll be looking forward to reading the book. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone.
You bet. Thanks for your time, man.
You bet, Vern. Okay, again, the book is D.B. Cooper and Me, A Criminal, A Spy, My Best Friend. We'll see where that heads next. Quick break, then the news, 720 WGN.